I'd like to thank Cedar.
It's not often I get invited back to the same place twice. That's what the part two stands for. We did one of these in Sydney. I started my career, I guess, if you can start your career, as an investment analyst, but as a complete failure because I graduated in October 1987. And if anyone knows about October 87, it wasn't a great time to graduate as an investment or aspiring investment analyst. So I never became one. But there are a couple of things that I learned and have had reinforced upon me as I've learned from different institutions and enlightened and forceful managers, that there's only a couple of things to remember, that returns of capital, like I want my money back if I give it to you, and I don't need to tell a Melbourne audience about that because people are in Singapore at the moment trying to get money back for people. So I want my return of capital and I want a return on capital. So if I give you some money, I want more of it back. I want a return on that. And it's no different from any investment that we make in IT. And that's why the business has to take more and more accountability for being what we refer as IT savvy. Because without that business savvy, then we won't get great returns. And ultimately, I hope that's the primary point that I make today, that the job of a modern IT group is to make business smart buyers of IT. So with that, let's see if I can prove a few points. So this is more or less the ideas I want to cover. It's about business leadership. How IT savvy is the company, not is IT as a function. You'll see that no matter who you talk to, the smartest guys on this topic still haven't got it figured out yet. So they have very different views. And I've met a couple of these guys that I'll tell you about later. So there are different schools of thought. As we go into the very micro view, the economic view of capital and how it gets used and allocated in the firm, I'd like to set a stage how the market invests in companies and what they look for in different organisational models or business models. And then if we look into the operating model, so the micro level of the firm, what is it that's more likely to produce greater value in that business in the way you make IT decisions and how you deploy capital effectively? And I'll go through four target operating models that you can choose from. And then around aligning IT to strategy and the business model, you know, most people will talk about, you know, you've got to have a business strategy and then you get an IT organisation, you align it to it, and it's all about the magic and art and science of aligning IT to business. Well, I have a proposition that, in fact, you have to get your business model understood and then you architect against that model because strategy changes all the time. And then if you take that macro context and the micro within the firm, then you start looking at how do you deploy IT as a portfolio of investments. And that's where we get down to the real oil. That is the real difference, I believe, and most people could prove, is that the only difference between good IT organisations and bad ones is the people. It's the choices the people make and how they then deploy the choices they've made. So pretty much all of us in the room can buy Oracle or SAP or IBM or even Sun, if you so choose. You can choose whatever you like. And we're all limited in terms of the choices, but the main differentiator is how quickly and how well we deploy those choices. So I'll talk a little bit about the portfolio. And then lastly, how some firms actually can, if they're very good, get up to 40% more than their competitors or 40% more in terms of returns on their IT investments. So just by a quick show of hands, how many of you believe you belong to an IT savvy firm? I've got to believe that, right? It's the first thing, self-belief. There's not many. Come on, you can't be too shy. Okay, let's see if we've met that goal. So by IT savvy, the practices that you'd have is that you'd have great IT for internal and external communication, the high use of web or internet deployment, that you'd have a very high percentage of digitization in most of your transactions with suppliers and customers, and that the competencies that you have in the people is IT is a company-wide function. It's not a separate back-office entity with people with bad haircuts. Because that's often how IT is described, as this cost centre with people that they don't quite understand, they certainly wouldn't let in front of a customer, and ought to be kept in the back office, whatever that means. And then a very high level of management involvement. And that means right up through the CIO, CEO, CFO, all those C initials. They have to have a very strong IT savvy quotient. So let's see what IT savvy can be measured by. If you have high degrees of IT savvy, you should be able to get at least 20% better than your competitors, and a return on the assets that you've deployed. That's the sum total of all the investments you've made of at least 30% higher than your competitors. Because when you think about it, the broadest generalisation, most companies are consuming around 3.5% of their total revenues in IT spend, and that's in terms of total operating expense, 15%. And that's looking out over 6,000 companies in the world, whether they're into manufacturing, whether they're into retailing, distribution, financial services. But here's the big problem, because we're all looking for the holy grail on how to determine value and how to find it. Let's think about two-thirds of all IT investments generally fall short of expectations. And we'll go into talking about the ability to gain above average returns. But if we now talk about the two differing views, these guys are on the extreme, by the way. Paul Strassman and Eric Brynjolfsson, very, very different characters. I've met both of them in my 8 years in New York. I've had several cups of tea with Paul. He was the CIO of Kraft and Xerox and most recently NASA, and was called in around the time of the last space shuttle disaster. And he's not well liked by most IT people because he says it how it is. He's in the Clayton Christensen camp, you know, IT doesn't matter. He says there's no correlation between IT and profitability, and he's got some pretty good research that underpins that. And he reckons that you can either overspend or underspend, and depends on where you want to put your benchmarks, but all that measures is efficiency, not effectiveness. And his point there is you can overspend, but if you've got the wrong people, you're not going to get value. So he talks about information productivity, and then he also talks about the human capital component. Do you actually have the right people making the right decisions and deploying on time? Because if you don't, you're not going to be effective. And I urge you to Google this guy, because there's some very interesting work that he's done right back through information productivity up through a book called The Squandered Computer. And basically his thesis is we spend so much on developing software and deploying infrastructure that all the productivity gains we seek to achieve are lost in wasted software development or the wrong decisions. Whereas Eric Brynjolfsson, he stood before Congress and Senate and he said, you know, the state and the federal government have a responsibility alongside corporations to invest heavily in IT because that's the primary source of economic growth. And he did some research in the early 90s that suggested that good deployers of technology could get $20 for every dollar spent at the loading bay, and bad deployers of technology would only get $4 for every dollar spent at the loading bay for buying software and hardware and bringing in people to do that work. But I think as they both have looked for this holy grail, and when you sit down and have a cup of tea and a chat with these guys, they do still regard themselves as in an uncertain science. So it's all very well us practitioners trying to make a buck out there in industry, and we know that we've got to get a return of and on capital, and we can only do that by saving operating dollars or making new revenue. They would both sum it up by saying that it's IT investments really only a top layer and you've got a whole lot of other high-performance needs to drive a digital organisation. And that organisation capital is actually 10 times IT capital, so there are so many other bundled contributors to value. And that's why this thing is a bit of a black art, or why IT investment could be referred to as a principle or dark matter. We know it's all around us, but it's bloody hard to measure. So let's go into the macro, and bear with me a little bit, because I've got to quote some work that MIT did. And if any of you that have met me or know me know that we've sent off about 130 people now to an MIT program, principally on the belief that if we have the right leadership in both our business and in our IT functions, and they understand the value of an enterprise architecture, they understand the value of making the right IT decisions, then they'll probably make better ones and they'll probably deploy investments faster. So let's think about it in the macro sense, how the market responds to different business models. There are about four, and it's about what a business does and what types of rights are sold. So when you look down the vertical axis, that's the asset rights. That is, you know, are they selling ownership of assets, or are they creating assets and distributing those assets? Are they selling the right to use assets, the landlord? Are they matching buyers and sellers, you know, brokers? So a creator buys raw material or components from suppliers and then transforms that and turns that into product like Ford and Intel and Sun. The distributor buys products that are already built and resells those, essentially the same product as somebody else, but adding value through the distribution network, like a Walmart or an Amazon. And a landlord gives the right to use it for a specified period of time, like, you know, a Marriott or a Hertz rent-a-car. And then a broker is really, as you know, just, you know, facilitating a deal between one or other party and taking a fee for that. So those models hold true. You know, that's an eBay or a Schwab or ourselves. ComSec as a share trader. So those models are what we would regard as intensive users of IT. And then if you look at the second dimension along the bottom, that's distinguishing among the different types of capital, you know, physical, financial, intangible, and human capital. So, you know, the durable items are physical ones, the cash and securities are the financial ones. Intangible ones are, you know, intellectual property like software and patents and copyrights. And the human assets of, you know, time and effort and goodwill, but things that can be rented out, you know, human services like EDS and Accenture and others. So what does the market prefer? And then how do we select a model? Well, contrary to what you might think intuitively, firms that make their revenues from broking or distributing are more highly valued by investors than the creators of IP or landlords that rent out time and space. And given 51% of all firms in the US and all firms in Australia are creators, you'd expect investment in creators to be much higher. So that's the first point to take, is that brokers and distributors highly favoured in the financial market. So they must somehow have much smarter ways of conducting business and digitising business. And then the second thing that's interesting to note is that firms with human and financial business models are more highly valued by investors than those that are investing in physical and intangible assets. And when you think about it, 74% of all revenues generated on the stock exchange are in those business models from physical assets. You'd think that would be a more favoured asset class, but in fact it's the human and financial asset classes that are more attractive than the physical and intangible assets. So that's the macro scene. When you get into the micro level of the firm, we talk about four different business models. And if you look along, again, the vertical axis, that's about integration. How integrated do your applications, does your data need to be? And then if you look along the bottom, how standardized does that data and the applications need to be? Let me talk about the four different business models quickly. You know, replication would be a model like ING Direct, where they've built some software, they've created data structures, and they've built that in one country, and then they go and export it to multiple jurisdictions, and they run a very low cost of capital, and they can replicate that business very cheaply and very effectively and very fast and deploy that new business model as a monoline and quickly grab market share and quickly grab new revenues and overtake, in some cases, the incumbent. And so they've got a high level of standardization. They built it once and used it many times. But they've got a very low level of integration because they run silo within that local jurisdiction. They don't get economies of scale across the globe. They get economies of scope by having many instances of the same thing in many countries. And that's a very deliberate model, and that's why we need to understand the organisational model first and the strategy second. So I think that's the first point, is the departure from what we once thought, where you just figured out what your corporate strategy was and then you went and figured out what the IT strategy should be, and I don't think we can continue to think in that model anymore. So you have to make very tough choices and work with the business to understand what is the model and then how do we architect for that. And do we need, therefore, a high level or a low level of integration? And do we need a high level or a low level of standardisation in the choices that we make around applications and data structures? So here's the second part of it, and often people go to this one first, and I'd claim that it was the second. The first thing is setting out your strategic context. Now, within that, you're trying to figure out what is your company capable of doing, what's their actual strategy, and how are decisions made. And once you understand that architecture, then you can put together your IT architecture. So IT, therefore, has to be incorporated into the business planning. It's not a function left to IT. It's a governance decision by the business. So we've actively sought to push that level of decision-making into the business. And then also given the discretion to the business to actively involve themselves in resource allocation and managing the IT resource. And also make the business responsible for managing the IT resource. And then what it's left up to the IT organisation to do is to manage this concept of the portfolio. So if you look in the bottom right-hand corner, you'll see a colourful triangle. That's the most simplified view of what we think of in terms of a portfolio. And so we talk about different asset classes: informational, strategic, transactional, and infrastructure. Let's get into that a little deeper. There are four different objectives for IT investment, and managing it in portfolio means that you can manage these portfolio classes any way you like, depending on the model you've chosen. So any portfolios you're familiar requires a measure of your current stock in a certain class. So if we take a unit trust or a mutual fund approach to it, or asset management approach, you know, you can be heavy in hedge funds and short in cash, and at the moment that would be a bad thing. At the moment you'd like to be long on cash and have much greater discretion and liquidity, because liquidity, as we know, is quite valuable at the moment. The only difficulty with using a portfolio approach when it comes to fixed investment is it's not easy to switch in and out of different classes. Once you've invested in a project and it's 6 months underway, it's very hard to stop and all of a sudden switch and get into another asset class. So that's why it's important to understand where all your investments are today, that's your stock, and where you would like your investments to be in 3 to 5 years' time. It doesn't have to be a precise science, but it does have to be done, because it's the only thing that's actually going to give you flexibility. So let me talk a little bit about the four classes, and then when you get into questions, You can ask a little bit more deeply if this is interesting. The transactional part of IT is, you know, process automation, cutting costs, looking at where you can get increases in volume and improve unit costs or unit pricing, you know, order processing, bank transfers, that type of thing, billing, withdrawals, and also repetitive things like accounting and other functions. Informational IT, I think that's probably self-explanatory. You know, it's reporting, communicating internally, reporting internally or externally to customers, suppliers, regulators. So, you know, decision support, planning control, sales analysis, that type of thing. Strategic IT is where you're actually making discretionary bets to get into new products and services or new markets. And the development of new capabilities or diversification. And infrastructure, well, you know, that almost speaks for itself. That's both technical and human, and it's multiple applications, it's servers, networks, laptops, shared databases, that type of thing. Help desk probably fits into there. It's also worthwhile to note that components of projects can be in all four classes. Not all projects will be in all four classes, but you need to measure the total stock of what you have running in terms of your application portfolio and your infrastructure portfolio, and also all that you're investing in your projects. And what can we expect from that? Well, in the informational category, you generally are driving better quality, better pricing, faster cycle time, and getting better margins. The results typically are showing that the companies that are deploying these types of techniques are getting a higher market valuation, they're getting greater innovation and greater sales, and they're improving margins in the short run, and they're actually getting up to that 20-30% return on assets that I referred to earlier. One word of caution, if you go overweight in your strategic part of your portfolio, it's more than likely that 50% of these projects will fail. So you can destroy capital very, very quickly. But on the other hand, if you make very smart decisions and get these things deployed very quickly, you can actually take 2 to 3 year jump on the competition through increased pricing and market share improvement. And again, this is data from MIT and been researched in over 2,000 companies. So we come to some of the final points that I'd like to make. How do firms actually get 40% or more value by being savvy? They get it because the top management is involved in the decision-making. It's not left to IT alone. It's fully integrated. So IT is not regarded as a discrete function. It's within the business. Oddly enough, we're finding that companies that don't have high turnover, and particularly in the executive suite, i.e. they have less political turbulence, more disciplined around decision-making. And it feeds itself, because a failed project generally leads to a failed CIO and a quick dismissal and a farewell function, if you're lucky. It's one day off my two-year anniversary, so I'm quite conscious of that. The other thing that feeds on itself is the health of the user satisfaction. We have a lot of detailed measures around how happy our customers are and how happy our staff are, and you actually find a very strong correlation between the technology choices, the technology stability, and the technology investment appetite, the more successful you've been. So if you actually put the portfolio details in the hands of the business and they actually believe they've got greater discretion over the investment decisions, they're more likely to give you more money. And just an example from my own last 2 years of experience, it was mentioned earlier that we'd saved $200 million in the last 2 years. Our investment, our capital investment, has gone up by the exact amount that we've saved. We've had $200 million more a year to invest in new projects. So that comes back to that trusted relationship. There's greater leverage over re-engineering and end-to-end process redesign. And what's more important, and this was the fundamental point that I made earlier, is the capability of the employees, because that is the ultimate differentiator. So this notion of IT savvy has been around since Gartner coined the phrase in 2003, and it's the enterprise's ability to gain above average industry returns. But let's be cautioned by Paul Strassman. Strassman, as you remember, he's the guy that said you can be more efficient, but that will not make you any better. You'll only just be measuring yourself with your industry peers. The only way that you are going to guarantee higher returns to the business is getting the right people in the organisations and giving them the ability to deploy much faster.